All right, so we're going there, the hyperbaric chamber. Every diver's worst fear, right? Maybe, maybe not. So we're actually going inside a hyperbaric chamber, the facility, how it runs, the operation, all that good stuff. Hyperbaric Health Services, St. Augustine. And yes, we're gonna talk about diving, we're gonna talk about the hyperbaric chamber and actually what it's used for most of the time, which has nothing to do with diving. And some regulars that got the bends. You're gonna like that part. Mitch Hall is like a cool, calm, collected David Spade. You'll see what I mean in a minute. He's an avid diver. He goes offshore St. Augustine, Northeast Florida, off his boat. He was a commercial diver before he did hyperbaric medicine, sinking wrecks, working on bridges. And of course, stick around to the end where I'm gonna weigh in with my opinion on something controversial. They had a lot of fun doing this one. You're gonna love it. Hyperbaric Chamber, Mitch Hall. Hope you enjoy. Mitch, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for coming by.
So you've now got a much larger hyperbaric treatment facility.
Hyperbaric Health Services, St. Augustine.
You're in my favorite town on earth, in my opinion, my hometown. So you have two hyperbaric chambers back there.
Yes.
I'm just going to tell you right now, our audience wants to avoid hyperbaric chambers.
Yes.
So divers go into hyperbaric chambers when they've had a diving accident related to staying down too long, coming up too fast. You might hear us say DCS, which is short for decompression sickness. A lot of people don't realize this is not on their insurance plan, even
right.
If they've got that Cadillac plan. I've had doctors, head doctors of big hospitals in the scuba class check, and they go, it wasn't on there. This is definitely something that a lot of people don't know about.
Yes.
And are a little afraid of, especially in the diving world. It's like, ooh, you got to go in the chamber.
In the chamber.
And you have one of those, and you have treated divers, but most of the time you're not treating divers.
That's correct.
What are you doing most of the time?
Most of the time we're saving lives and stomping out disease, I like to say. We're in the business primarily of wound healing. Now, wounds come in all sorts of shapes, sizes, locations, and we treat all of them. You can have a non-healing foot wound, you can have a bone infection, you can have a brain injury that's a wound. Just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not a wound. We also have late effects of radiation.
Now, these are people that like went in and worked on the Chernobyl reactor, things
no,
like that?
No, not that type of radiation.
No?
Okay. So we're talking about a cancer patient that had radiation treatment. Years down the road, they'll start developing side effects from that radiation. It manifests as things like proctitis or cystitis, which is lesions in the bladder.
Proctitis, what's that?
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
Because I know what a proctologist is.
Yeah.
All right, we'll leave it there.
Yeah, what's happened there is that the radiation did its job killing the bad cells, but it also took out a lot of good cells, including the vasculature. So now oxygen is not getting delivered to spots in the bladder. They're developing wounds. Through hyperbaric oxygen therapy, we can revascularize that soft tissue.
If I'm looking at those hyperbaric chambers, they look like time machines to me. You're saying it really does kind of work like one when it comes to healing. You said not only it heals faster, but you said the scars were healing better.
Yes.
They look less scarry.
Exactly, exactly. Because we're revascularizing, that tissue can get back to closer to normal. Those tissues are kind of struggling. They morph into all sorts of ugliness, right? Scars can look pretty gnarly. But when you compare scars that have healed under hyperbaric therapy versus not using hyperbaric therapy, there's a big difference in the coloration of it. Scars are smoother, flatter, look more aesthetically pleasing. More importantly, they don't open back up.
This sounds like if I get a wound, I want to be in a hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah, I would. I mean, any kind of wound, if I could get in a chamber, that's what I want to do.
You ever do it for like headaches and hangovers?
Yeah, and I haven't done it for a hangover, although
would it work?
That is a protocol that's out there because it does reduce inflammation in the brain and gets your oxygen flowing there. But the reduction of the inflammation is the big key.
So that would work?
Yes.
It should?
Yes. It's used quite a bit for that.
This is a place for a young person to get a job.
Right.
You know, hey, you get little side perks. Like, yeah, he's always in here Sunday morning real early before we open.
Right.
What a go-getter. So hyperbaric chamber treats dive accidents. We know that. And you know what? Just to catch anyone out that might be hearing about one of these things for the first time, I'm going to do the fast version here. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to try.
Here we go.
All right. Oh, crap, now I'm nervous. So the hyperbaric chamber, basically in a sealed off, closed off environment from out here, pressurizes the gas around them, the gas that they're breathing in there. You can turn up the oxygen percentage in there, the fraction of gas. And then they're getting a much higher dose with much higher penetration into those tissues of oxygen.
Absolutely.
When divers go down, the ambient pressure of water is increasing around them. Mm-hmm. And at 33 feet in the ocean, it's doubled from what it is up here. At 66 feet, it's tripled, 99 quadrupled, and so on.
Right.
When you put them in there and pressurize it, you guys have used the term, we take them down.
Right.
So it's like going down to more pressure underwater, kind of.
Correct.
And you said it's the equivalent of typically you take them down to what depth?
Typically in wound healing, we're doing 2 to 2.4 ATA, which is 33 to 42 feet of seawater.
So it's the equivalent of taking them down to 32 to 40 something feet of seawater.
Right.
Now, when people are under pressure in there, do you feel it?
You do not. The only time you feel it, well, you'll feel it on your eardrums. You'll feel it on your sinuses.
Just like clearing going
just
down.
Just like clearing your ears. That's cool. What they got to do. Yes. Awesome. The only effect that the pressure has is on any cavity with airspace in it. So your lungs, your ears, and your sinuses. That's where you're going to feel it. We know that our tissues
in your stomach if you eat the wrong food, kind of taco truck.
Whatever air pockets you have in your gut. That's correct.
So do you ever tell people, like, don't swing by? There's a good taco truck out here, but don't go there till after?
Absolutely. They are encouraged to not eat foods that's going to cause gas buildup while they're in the chamber.
You've had divers come in.
Yes.
And you told me something when we were walking around back there that kind of hit home with me. And that is the divers that come in from getting the bends, you said they're usually spearfishers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not their first time.
No.
They tend to come back.
Yeah. I joke with a couple of them that I'm going to give them a punch card and I'll just punch their card whenever they come in and they'll get a free one after a certain number of punches. Because literally, they do return a couple of times a year.
And this is an intentional thing or is it an intentional accident?
I think they feel like, well, Mitch will fix me.
That's not good,
though. That's not good. That's not good. And I tell them all the time, don't come back. You know, dive your tables, please. I don't want to see you back.
Yeah, no one even knows what that means anymore.
Right.
Dive your tables.
Yeah, with the computers, they...
So yeah. Dive your computers.
Yeah.
I actually saw a post the other night that says, is this a red flag, people? And it was, we went to a dive operation, and they said they had all the gear we needed, and they didn't have computers, and they didn't use computers.
Okay.
And it was a guided dive. And I'm like, have we already forgotten about dive tables? And what people forget about is dive tables are actually, if you follow them, they're much more forgivable and they're much more conservative.
Right, they are conservative.
You know, as long as they have a depth gauge and some kind of watch or timer.
Right.
Even at the aquarium, I mean, there's none of that stuff because it's a set dive. We go in for this long, we go this deep max.
Right.
If they know the max depth and they're timing it and it's done as a group, I mean, that's how it was done forever and you can do that right now.
Yeah.
Do you think people have gotten too reliant on dive computers?
I think they can get a little reliant on technology. I love technology. It really does help us because with the computers, it's real-time adjusting.
Right.
If you bounce down to pick up your lobster net and you come back to this level here, your computer will allow for that.
Right.
A dive table doesn't. If you went down there, you were down there the whole time. Mm. So we had to come up sooner, right? There's something to say for that, but I never forget our roots, where we came from, dive tables. And I'll always compare what the computer is telling me to an actual dive table. And I go by the United States Navy dive tables. We use those for our treatments here.
Do you think it's important for people to still have a general grasp of their dive tables?
Absolutely.
Because I know this seems a little off from we're in a hyperbaric facility, but not understanding that gets you back there.
You will see dive tables are used for hyperbaric treatments, and especially when it comes to the multiplace chambers that are pressurized with regular air and they have an inside tender. That person that's in there, the tender that's taking care of the patients, they're basically scuba diving. And so they have to follow dive tables when they're in that chamber working.
You know exactly where you are and for how long. It's not like you're bobbling around a reef. I think I was this deep.
Right, yeah. Right.
I mean, that's the one, I guess, good thing with computers is they sort of take the guesswork out.
But you know that technology can break, right?
Yeah. It can, and your dive tables, also knowing those, gives you something to fall back on if your computer does fritz out, mm-hmm. so that you could either keep diving or at least know where you were for the next day. A lot of people aren't required if they teach computers anymore. Those standards have been removed if they have computers for most agencies. I mean, you got to teach one or the other. Or you can do both. There's nothing stopping you from teaching tables. But for me, I don't need students to master tables. I do go over them. I'd rather them get more bottom time with the limited time they have than sit in a classroom getting all pissy because they can't figure out the table on the board.
Right.
As long as they're diving computers, once they understand the tables and grasp it and they see how that time goes way down as you get deeper, it allows them to visualize what's going on
right.
versus just going off my watch.
computer.
I think it's important that they understand the physiology behind it and why their computer is telling them to do this
right.
and that.
What does this mean?
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that. I want to go back to one thing you were saying where the divers that get the bends, and you see them in your chambers here, your hyperbaric chambers, they tend to come back. And that once they get the bends, they seem to be more prone to it afterwards statistically. If someone is in a position where they violate the tables, that seems to be a habitual offender.
Well, I think it's more of there's a physiology behind it. Literature tells us that once you have taken a hit, you can be more susceptible to future hits. So you have to be extra cautious. You can have two divers dive the exact same profile, and one diver will get bent and the other one doesn't. Why? We don't know. You can have one diver that dove the same profile day after day after day, and then all of a sudden one day he gets bent. And then every day after that, he gets bent and bent and bent.
Sorry to interrupt. I'm going to be real quick. If you want to support this channel, go to sweetwaterscuba.com. Info's in the description. You can get the blue shirts, the red hat, the vinyl holographic tank stickers that everybody seems to love, and of course the autographed children's books that come directly from me. And back to the show.
I'll tell you real quick. One of my habituals eventually can't even snorkel anymore. He snorkeled to 50 feet and had to come and see me.
So free diving got him bent?
Free diving can get you bent as well. That's something that a lot of people don't know.
And he ended up coming and being treated in your hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah.
And that was after they got bent diving.
That was after I had already seen him a couple times the year before. And I told him every time, I said, eventually you're not going to be able to do this anymore. And sure enough, he came to me that final time and he said, Mitch, I've had to quit diving. And that was that.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Just to recap, someone got the bends and they kept getting it and coming in here. Now, you said this was somebody who was notorious for pushing their limits.
They were an aggressive spear fisherman, yes.
Okay. And you said it seems to be spear fishermen.
It does. To get to that blue water that they're looking for and to get to the fish that they're looking for, they're now in 120 to 160 feet of water.
They're going 20.
They're not your recreational that are doing, you know, 40-foot reef or, you know, 60-foot wreck or whatever. It's
right. But to a positive here, a lot of them do it regularly and don't have problems.
Yes, of course.
Because they're following their computers, staying within them, not pushing.
Absolutely.
And dive
tables. I mean, the bends are very rare.
A lot of divers are scared of the hyperbaric chamber, and they're like, I don't want to go in a chamber. Even when Katie was getting ready to get in, she's like, when you guys shut the door, we were just doing it for a little fun. When you guys shut the door, it got a little freaky.
There's something to say for being locked in a chamber, entirely reliant on someone else to get you out. There is no getting out of that chamber unless somebody lets you out.
Now, you said you have someone in there at all times to make sure the person in there doesn't have a seizure, doesn't have a heart attack or whatever. Mm-hmm. What if the person watching you has a seizure or a heart attack or whatever?
We have backups for that too. So we're constantly checking on each other. Well, there's backups for the backups. So
yeah, two is one, one is none. Man, when you start teaching scuba diving though, you need about five to have one. Because this one's free-flowing, this one leaks, this my gauge is, oh man,
you're
you wouldn't
right.
believe it. Once you got going and you're established working, as far as treatment of patients, what's something that kind of surprised you when you got going that you didn't expect that?
The healing effect and changing people's lives. When I was a commercial diver and I was being taught the clinical side of hyperbaric, I didn't realize just what an impact I was having on their lives. You know, people come back months, years later and thank you again. That I didn't expect.
You're so focused on getting it working in the
yeah,
business, you
I mean,
forgot that
I
like people are coming in and going, oh my gosh,
yeah.
Thank you.
I started out, I just thought it was cool.
Because you were a diver, and you were
a
commercial diver.
Yeah.
You did bridge work and all that
yeah.
stuff.
And we put divers in steel hull chambers and we pressed them down. And, you know, this was part of day-to-day operations. You know, they use them out in the dive industry to bring a diver out of the water, get the next one in the water while you're bringing this one back to one atmosphere in a safe, controlled environment. That's what chambers are used for there. They're not always used for injured divers, but they're used in day-to-day dive operations.
Some people use this just to rotate divers out.
Yes, and they're used for saturation diving, of course. So they'll put them in a chamber, they'll press them to the depth that they're going to be working at, and that person will stay at that pressure for nearly a month.
Oh, whoa. So those divers are going down deep, working on oil rigs, fixing bridges, whatever. And then you're saying they put them in a pressurized chamber, they bring them up, and they're just in that chamber for how long?
It could be up to a month.
So yeah. They're in
28
that
days.
28 days in that chamber while they got the next divers down there.
That's right.
And then when they're done, they go back down?
They're all living in a habitat that's pressurized.
It's like one of those mosquito cycle of life things.
A couple of guys will get it into a dive bell that's attached to their pressurized habitat. And that dive bell is pressurized, and so they'll go down and get out of that dive bell at that pressure. They'll do their work, they'll get back in it, it comes up, it's pressurized still, and they attach it back. The divers get out, next set of divers gets in, they seal everything off, everybody's still under pressure, and they go back down and do it again.
Who would want to do that?
I would have wanted to do it when I was a young man. It's not an old man's sport, I'll tell you that, and it's a short career. It's hard on the body to work under those pressures.
But it's got to pay well.
It does pay well, but you won't know a rich saturation diver because once they've done a job, they'll come back to shore and they'll buy a fancy motorcycle and hang out with the ladies and then
spend it all.
And spend it all. Because they're young bucks, you know? It's not until you reach 40 and you're too old to do saturation dive that you learn how to save money.
That's the truth, isn't it? What are people most afraid of when they have to go into the hyperbaric chamber? What's their big fear?
Is it going to hurt? We do have the claustrophobia issue to deal with. But if I had to say what are they most fearful of is whether or not it's going to hurt. Am I going to be able to clear my ears? That's primarily what it is. But I'll be honest with you, 90% of our patients are not fearful.
I guess most of your people aren't divers, and non-divers, do you have to actually coach them like how to clear and everything?
Yes.
Okay, because that's not natural to most people.
Right. Well, we equate it to the first thing we ask them, have you ever been diving? And if they say no, have you flown in an airplane? Well, when you're coming down for a landing, that pressure is building, you have to equalize your ears. Oh, I know what you're talking about. We'll ask them to do that for us. And do you feel your ears pop? Yes, I feel my ears pop. Okay, great.
Are you able to like stop it though if
yes,
they're having trouble?
Absolutely.
So you've got control over it. Mm-hmm. Is it a lever or a wheel or a knob? Or
we use a needle valve. So they tighten down, lefty loosey, righty tighty. You and I, we can jump off the boat and we can be at 60 feet of water in 45 to 60 seconds, right? We can do it pretty quick. Here, they're going to 33 feet or 42 feet in upwards of 10 minutes. We've got plenty of time to let them clear their ears. If they are having trouble, we can stop the pressurizing. We can come up a little bit, clear their ears, and then we can continue on. I've had a few that were a little difficult and took some extra time to get them there, but I've never had anyone that I couldn't get down there.
Just like diving, if someone's got a cold, can they get in?
It's going to depend on how severe their cold is and can they equalize. Some people can still equalize with a runny nose or a sinus headache or whatever, sinus infection. We try to stay away from that. It depends also on what they're treating for. If it's urgent that they be in the chamber, we're going to have to try to consider it and work through it. If it's grandma with a foot ulcer, send her home. She can come back in a couple of days after she's gotten better.
Have you had anybody freak out?
No.
Well, that's no fun.
No.
All right, you got to make something up.
I've had people say, I want to come out. I want to come out. We do not argue with that. We bring them out instantly because you don't know what's going on with that person and you definitely don't want to freak out in the chamber.
You said there's like, you got to have some stuff in there to make sure there's no sparking.
Yes. So when we bring our patients in, they take all of their clothing off. What they were born with is what they go in with. That and 100% cotton gown. And the sheets are 100% cotton. The blanket's 100% cotton. It's all hyperbaric certified. That's all that goes in the chamber. We're eliminating that risk of static electricity buildup. They also wear a ground bracelet so that if some weird situation happens that they build up some static electricity, that can be dissipated as well. Nothing goes in the chamber. No electronic devices. We ask them to not have a lot of makeups. Petroleum-based things do not do well under pressure. There are certain petroleums that can self-combust under pressure. So
never would have thought about that. If you could tell every scuba diver one thing, as someone who has put many a people in a hyperbaric chamber, what would you tell them? You're not allowed to say plane or dive, dive your plane. I mean, something deep. No pun intended there either.
Do we? Well, I would reinforce your ascent rate. You know, that's important. I won't say dive your plan your dive, plan your dive, dive your plan. What's that leave me with, Ken?
That's
Come
what
on.
I'm trying to, I'm feet to the fire here. It's, you know, I've started my classes with this, and I put the most dangerous thing in diving is, and I put one word, ego. right? And that's too scared to speak up, or I think I'm invincible and I'll be fine. That can go either way. But under that, I have two arrows. I draw two arrows and I put the two most dangerous animals in the water. Because everyone's, oh, the blue-ringed octopus, sharks. No, most people don't think that anymore, but you know, the irukandji or sea snakes. But it's never, and I'll give you a hint, these typically won't bite you or sting you, and they don't even have pinchers, at least in the South. Lobster and game fish.
Lobster and game fish.
Yep. Those are the two most deadly animals out there, and neither of these will hurt you.
Right. That's a fact.
Lost out. It's spearfishing their lobster.
You know it.
It's, I mean, it is.
That's it.
Anything we missed that you'd love to just throw in there?
My door is open. We are a training facility, so we encourage people to come and learn. You can come and hang out with us. You can do a tour. You can ask 1,000 questions. You can sign up for a class.
You do classes here.
We do classes here. I am a IBUM certified instructor, so I teach for the International Board of Undersea Medicine. A diver, a medical practitioner, a non-medical professional can sign up for a class. They can come in here, and depending on what their level of prerequisites are, they can leave here with a certification to either be a diver medic on a dive team, or they can operate a hyperbaric chamber in a medical facility.
No, this is cool, man. Thanks for the tour. Thanks for bringing us through. Thanks for throwing Katie into your little time machines back there.
My time machine.
Okay, well, Mitch, this has been fun. Thanks for letting me just probe your whole place here. It has that new facility smell.
Right.
Honestly, if anybody's here, swing by and visit. You do classes. St. Augustine is top. If you haven't been here, you should come here. The oldest city in North America. Right. It's epic.
Yep.
Mitch, thanks again, man.
Thanks again, bud.
All right.
See ya.
See ya.
I don't know how controversial this is, but dive tables versus dive computers. I think by and large, dive computers are safer. They eliminate a lot of user error. Everybody should have one. It helps people analyze what happened during the dive. The benefits are huge. Do I think we should throw away the tables? No, but I've actually heard people saying, oh, they didn't even have dive computers. They're very unsafe. Actually, a dive table in most cases is gonna give you a more conservative dive profile. It's a good backup, and there's a lot of places where it is absolutely okay to just use dive tables and not have a computer. An aquarium is a perfect example of controlled environments, known depths, where it's always planned. So, no, it is not a problem. Yes, computers are good. Yes, I think everyone should have one. I've got one right here. I also don't think you should spend class time in open water making people master dive tables, and here's why. Drawing out all those things, my opinion, it's a waste of time. You know, I really don't see a lot of use for academics in open water other than some very basic stuff. I think more bottom time would do wonders. They're not going to remember Boyle's Law in 2 years, and they're also not going to remember how to dive. Which one's going to hurt them? Not knowing how to dive. So I think it should be introduced. I think you should show everybody, make sure they can do it. No matter how well they ace it in the class, they're not going to remember it in a year from now anyways. But I think understanding that concept, what's going on, you see your maximum dive times at those depths getting smaller as you get deeper, you're understanding nitrogen load and all that good stuff. I think just making sure they grasp the concept and go, oh, okay, I get what that means. I think that's pretty good. But then I think everyone should be trained how to use a computer, and I think everyone should get a computer. Remember, you can keep a dive table picture just on your phone. Most people have their phones on their dive boats now. Anyways, you can actually get plastic ones. Having that in your back pocket, even metaphorically, is a good thing. Pro computer, understand a dive log and be able to fall back on it, worst case scenario. That's my two cents. As you know, I respect all different opinions here as long as they are respectful. And I love to hear what you say. Hope you enjoyed the episode. I'll see you in the comments whenever and wherever you're watching this. I hope you have a great day, great night, great evening, and you're planning your next dive. See you later.